हरि ओम सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So the actions of a devotee and a theistic moralist are in many places identical, but according to the faith, the nature of the actions is different. As the actions of the theistic moralist are not aiming at anything beyond matter, they are despicable, though he respects the Lord. Though he respects the Lord, he does not accept the spiritual form of the Lord or the final destination of the soul. Thank you. He cannot get deliverance from the wheel of karma. When the theistic moralist realizes the insignificance of the material world and tries to attain liberation from the bondage of karma, he sees three possible ways to accomplish this. Right? So from the outside, the actions of the theistic moralist and that of the devotee look quite similar, because Mm-hmm. Metta, the rituals, everything like this. Now, if you're talking about especially traditional, Mm-hmm. Right, they're going to have Mangalarti, they'll have their altar, they'll have their pujas, they're worshipping Krishna. Right, you know, they like kirtans, they like, how you say, harikatha, like that. They'll generally, at least in India, they'd be vegetarian. Right, they wear dhotis or this or that, and they're quite comfortable with all this kind of thing. They visit holy places and all. So they're going to look similar, but the point is it's just that you've added the Lord to your moralistic program. Because the moralism means that socially, then everybody can work together for economic development. So you've accepted God as part of that in reality. But even doing that, he doesn't accept the spiritual form of the Lord, the final destination. So this is where we talk about the smarta. Mm-hmm. Right? So now basically what we're happening here is that this smarta element, now it has this two aspects. This or the next one where it's just just accepting the element of liberation, right? So then they may be doing doing the same form of the worship, but now the mentality has fixed more on liberation rather than karma. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, if they're householders, then the form will look the same. If they're not, if they're taken sannyas or that, then it will have that difference. They may not get into the worship and those kind of things, Mm-hmm. Right? So it looks very, very similar. Right. Does that make sense? So this would define what's the difference between the position of the Hindu and the position of the devotee. They're both the same thing, so it's just a matter of mentality. Right? If you accept the form of the Lord as eternal, then you're a devotee. If not, then you'll be a theistic moralist. That's all, but the form is the same. The culture is the same. That's the advantage in the Vedic Varnashram system, is the culture is exactly the same for everybody. Now, what will happen is the difference in consciousness, right? So, therefore, how much they follow, to what degree, where their focus is, and all that. But culturally, there'll be one homogeneous ability to cooperate together. So, socially, it works very nicely. The difference will be in the theology, right? Mm-hmm. Which is interesting is that then you take the non-Vedic is they may have the same theology that there's only one God, but the cultural differences are so great they can't actually function together.
Sure.
Yeah, interesting, right? Yeah. So the Vedic system is much more scientific.
Yeah.
Right? Because it creates actually a social system that can work. Right? So now for a devotee, let's say he started from that theistic moralistic platform. right? So now, being, you know, a nice, proper, you know, varnashram Hindu, then he comes in contact with pure devotion. So now he becomes interested in the soul, which is the fourth level, but he considers the form of the Lord to be eternal. So it naturally brings him to the fifth level. Mm-hmm. Right? So again, the difference between the devotee and the smart is whether the form of the Lord is eternal. Mm-hmm. So again, here the same. That's the difference between the theistic moralist and the devotee. Right? But the point is making that full, because in pure devotion, if we're talking mixed devotion, because this third platform is the platform of karma, you might have a devotee who is interested in pure devotion, accepts the eternal form of the Lord, but is distracted by the idea of karma, good facilities, good social interaction, and those kind of things. Does that make sense? So that means that the moralism element is becoming more prominent than it should be in the balance between the theism and the moralism. Right? If it gets too extreme, then the moralism is greater than the theism. Ultimately, he's a devotee, but it becomes clouded by the social needs being greater than the spiritual. You know, it's kind of like, if the social needs aren't in place, how can we be spiritual? Mm-hmm. You know, like Prabhupada mentioned, the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. If India is not free, how can we, you know, from the British, how can we consider spiritual life? The Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, no, they're independent things. It's because it's the nature of the soul. You can be, you know, on the transcendental platform, even though the external environment's not ideal. You know, if India is free, great. But that's not the basis of spiritual life. You understand? So that one has to watch out for. So, because that's the thing, is now, if you have that thing, that's varnashram. If you like social structures, but you don't accept varnashram, then it's the position of the atheistic moralist, though you're not an atheist. Right? And if you don't accept, you just do whatever you want for yourself and don't care about anybody else, it brings it down to the atheistic immoralist. Right? So that's the mix. Or you just, you know, you really fall, but you just want to get freed from the material world, this, that. Then that fourth level, the personalistic platform, that becomes the mix.
And another interesting thing is that the theistic immoralist, that's like Appa Sampradaya, right?
Theistic immoralist. Yeah, you're Appa Sampradaya. Yeah.
That area that you think, that a person might think, this has to be done before something else.
Yes.
Would you say that's where someone's faith is? That everything depends
yes.
on that?
Yes. Yeah, there would be. You know, like some say, until we establish Varnashram, then the society won't be. No, until we establish Kevala Bhakti, that's what makes the movement strong.
So that's the faith of the devotee.
Yeah, the mission of Lord Chaitanya is at its pinnacle when Kevala Bhakti is the focus. Now, how much facility, how much training is there? Because the point is someone can have faith and pure devotion, though they don't have the training and practice to be following, let's say, the Varnashram or anything like that. Like when the devotees at, say, 26 Second Avenue, the focus is just on pure devotion. But if you look at what the mix is, you know, it would be hard to actually really identify, right? Because it's not exactly, you know, the moralistic element is not necessarily a strong point there. You know, and so, but the movement is strong because the focus is on pure devotion. Mm-hmm. Now with time, as one becomes purified, you can introduce all these elements. Because they're secondary. And the secondary, that's the problem. The secondary requires more skill. So therefore, it looks primary. You know, the devotion, oh, anybody can do that, but the skill, no, only specialized people can do it, so that's higher. No, that's just, everybody's specialized, but just in what? When the theistic moralist realizes the insignificance of the material world and tries to attain liberation from the bondage of karma, he sees three possible ways to accomplish this. One, 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 one.
That is not two, two.
Yeah, two, two. One should gradually give up attraction for material karma and become fixed in spiritual truth. Two, one should offer all action for material results to Vishnu, the Supreme Spirit. In performing karmas, one should think of the pleasure of Vishnu. After performing the karma, offer the results to Krishna. Right? Three, all obligatory karma should be done with devotion to Krishna. Those duties which, not performing, in no way obstructs normal existence should be rejected. Right? Does that make sense? So this first one would be your the theistic moralist, like coming to that second platform. Mm-hmm. Okay, here he explains it next. Those who accept the first path are yogis or ascetics. The ascetics try to loosen the knot of karma by undergoing great difficulties. Right. So here they're giving us attraction for material karma and becoming fixed in spiritual truth. So it's not that they're engaging material karma in spiritual truth. Mm-hmm. They're just giving it up. Mm-hmm. So yogis are ascetics. The ascetics try to loosen the knot of karma by undergoing great difficulties. This Vedic process includes Panch Agni Vidya and Nidhi Dhyasana. Panch Agni Vidya is where you sit with four fires on four sides out in the noonday sun. Right? So the sun is the fifth fire, and then you have one front back. So in other words, that, or you stand up to your neck in water in the middle of winter. You do all these things that basically is what the Vanaprastha does to break down his being conditioned by to material comfort. In other words, try to separate the concept of the soul from the body through very rigorous, austere means. Right? Different types of yoga, like Astanga Yoga, Saranga Yoga, Dattatreya Yoga, and Gorakshanti Yoga, have been prescribed. Have you heard of some of these? Among them, Hatha Yoga and Patanjali's Raja Yoga are highly esteemed in the world. Right? Generally, that's all anybody knows.
Yeah.
The Astanga Yoga of Patanjali is chief. The person must first practice yama, non-violence, truth, no stealing, celibacy, not accepting from others. Then he practices niyama, cleanliness, satisfaction, austerity, study, meditation on God. By doing this, he gives up all bad action and becomes habituated to good actions. He then practices postures, then breath control. Having controlled his breath, he concentrates on a form of Vishnu, and then fix the mind steadily on Vishnu. Before the meditation, however, the mind must be withdrawn from all sense objects. When the mind has become motionless, samadhi is obtained. The main intent of this process is to become free of karma by practicing rejection. However, it is a slow process and it has many obstacles. Footnote 4. It is that by practicing restraint of the senses and by the yoga system, one can get relief from the disturbances of desire and lust. But this is not sufficient to give satisfaction to the soul. For this is derived from devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.6.35. Right? So we understand here, so it's by austerities, by practicing just the good works and all that, then this is how this path works. This is what you call your normal path of karma. I mean, jnana. People would relate to this as jnana. But at the same time, because yoga becomes a prominent one, it's still an aspect of karma.
Were you saying jnana or jnana?
Jnana. Means jnana from the point of that we have karma and jnana. So then, because yoga then has that element of jnana, but it's also, you know, the first stages are karma, because you're doing here non-violence, truth, not stealing, celibacy, all these different things you're doing. So you're setting it up that you're being very moral, you know, very good like that. So here you're just mechanically trying to do. The problem with this, to do this, someone who can do this must be respected, because you would have to have, to do it properly, you would have to have already good qualities to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like the businessman can make money with capital. Right? If a businessman doesn't have capital, he can't actually do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that he has the good qualities with which he can cultivate this development of good qualities means he is a pious person from previous lives.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's respected for that, but it's incomplete. Right? And it's very, very difficult. Those who maintain the second method think that whatever material thing a person desires should be dedicated to the pleasure of Vishnu and then offered to Krishna. However, this act is contrary to nature. Footnote 5. If Varnashram Dharma is to be established again, the faults have arisen, the present system must be given up. Those who wish to benefit their nation should institute the following instructions, otherwise you cannot benefit the nation. Having completed brahmachari life, one should become a grihastha. Having become a grihastha, one should become a vanaprastha. Having become a vanaprastha, one should become a sannyasi. But a brahmachari grihastha may also become a sannyasi. Jabala Upanishad. So more of this, or?
That's it. If I'm not mistaken.
You sure?
Oh no, sorry, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
Thus, when all man's activities are dedicated to the service of the Lord, those whose very activities, which cause this perpetual bondage, become the destroyer of the tree of work. Whatever work is done here in this life for the satisfaction of the mission of the Lord is called bhakti yoga, or transcendental loving service to the Lord. And what is called knowledge becomes a concomitant factor. Srimad Bhagavatam 1:5, 34-35. So, doing your activities for the satisfaction of the Lord, that's bhakti. Knowledge is just a natural side element. Because in the performance of bhakti yoga, you hear from devotees, you study the scriptures. It's part of devotion. It's not that it's a separate element. Like we see in the first level, it's a separate element. One acts in his profession according to his position in the modes of nature and gradually gives up these activities. He attains the nishkama stage. One shows the symptoms of being a brahmachara, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, as described above. Even if he has appeared in a different class, he should be accepted according to those symptoms of classification. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:11, 32-35. So that would be instructions of Narad Muni. Like,
yeah.
When Bhrigu, when in Manusamhita, Bhrigu describes it, this same point is there, but it's not so obvious. Right, because the point is one is engaged according to his nature, but people just take it that birth is that, so it accommodates the whole wide range. Well, Narad Muni, with his explanation, he brings out here is that these symptoms, they should be accepted according to that. But the point is, Varnashram should only be engaged in the Lord's service. So then you're dealing with devotees, and because of the devotional process, one becomes purified at a much quicker rate. Right, you know. I mean, it's greatly quicker rate.
Mm-hmm.
So that means is whatever impurities might be there in the beginning, in the practice of the brahmacharya and the training, then that purification will bring him to whatever standard that works very comfortably. But we will see is that within the lifetime, as they go, because of the devotion, then they'll naturally come to that vanaprastha stage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So basically, all devotees could come to the vanaprastha stage. And that vanaprastha stage, basically, for us, is a brahminical platform. The occupation is basically brahminical. Right? It's just, all it is that life is made very simple and all those kind of things. But you're not engaged in anything else. You're just, the husband and wife are engaged in austerities in Krishna consciousness. So that the direct activities become the prominent. Indirect are very minimal, just what's necessary. That, so it becomes a brahminical. So the brahmachari is a brahminical position, even though one may be a brahma, kshatriya, vaishya. It doesn't matter. But the lifestyle and what you're doing is brahminical. Your vanaprastha is the same. Sannyasa is the same. So for a devotee, it becomes very easy because of the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. So they're cultivating the topmost level of, you know, brahminical nature. So that will have an effect on the conditioned side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the purification will be there. So the elements that are useful, those will be brought together. Does that make sense?
Maharaj, so after Brahmacharya Ashram, is there any examples where devotees went one prasta directly instead of going to Grahastha, because there is complications in Grahastha Ashram?
Means generally here he says, Brahmacharya Grahastha may also become a sannyasi. So the normal thing is you'll go Brahmacharya Grahastha Vanaprastha Sannyas, or Brahmacharya Grahastha Sannyas, or Brahmacharya Sannyas. Right? So it's not so, it's Vanaprastha is more important for the Grihastha than it's for a Brahmacharya, because Brahmacharya is already living that lifestyle. So then from there, Sannyas. So you do see, I think, many of these sages in that, then they're like Vanaprasthas, but they're, you know, they're Brahmacharis, but they have that independence, they have their own ashram, they are performing their yajnas and austerities. So they kind of have the facilities like a Vanaprastha, though they're not a sannyasi. Does that make sense? So you see these sometimes you see in the old paintings and that, you have sadhus, they're wearing dhotis, right? And they may be even kind of fancy dhotis and this, but they're saffron. They're sages. So they're kind of like living in that Vanaprastha mode. Does that make sense? Because they're not living under a guru. They're living in their own ashram. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't become grihasthas. Does that make sense? But generally from Brahmacharya you just go to sannyas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those who maintain the second method, okay. Those who maintain the second method think that whatever material thing a person desires should be dedicated to the pleasure of Vishnu and then offered to Krishna. However, this act is contrary to nature. Can a heart moved by material pleasure naturally decide to please Vishnu? If he does this for show, then it cannot be regarded as a sincere attempt. It is only meant to deceive the mind. The devotion for Vishnu of all the women who worship Annapurna in order to have enough food in future lives is simply words. It goes without saying that it's not possible to attain liberation from material bondage by such offerings. Okay, so the second one then is also very popular, according to this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so this being popular, but it doesn't really, it won't give liberation, because its point is karma. You're renouncing the fruit, but you're renouncing the fruit for a result in karma, not in jnana. Right? It means that first stage, then you're giving up the activities of fruitive work for liberation. So then we can say that might give the liberated platform. But it's also very dry. The second platform is that your theistic moralist who has the understanding of the soul, and so therefore they're worshipping Vishnu, right? But, you know, renouncing. So it's nice karmia, but that's still that nice karmia is to get the result in karma. It's not the nice karma to get the result in karma.
Yeah.
In gyan. Yes? No? Yeah. So it just means basically you're a theistic moralist with a more of a renounced, you know, following a process of nice karma. Right? But it's still rooted in karma.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So the Lord becomes just an aspect of
it's still an anga of your karma, but you know, you may have that faith, you're worshipping, but the problem is you're still only worshipping to get what you want. Right? So then there's every chance, since it's an anga, if you don't see that you should get something from Vishnu, you may give up that worship also. You know, just continue your other pious elements.
Is this any different to karma misra bhakti?
Karma misra bhakti means karma misra bhakti would have this element, though you know that pure devotion is the ultimate, though now you want this, but you know that. That's the thing with the devotee, is they're always the devotee, but the mix will have these flavors. So therefore the mix will have these weaknesses. Like that. That's all. But it's not that there's any comparison that the devotee is on the same platform. That should never be mistaken, that this platform of theistic moralist with that fourth level of consciousness of renunciation, it's not that they and the devotee are the same. Now, the devotee who has these mix of these other impurities is never the same as a materialist, because they actually accept the form of the Lord is eternal, and that prema is the ultimate goal. So all it is just a matter of time before they come to that platform nicely. You know, it's just someone may be quicker, someone may be slower. But in any case, the devotee is in their own category. That's why then these other elements that seem to be not appreciated by the slow path, the devotees can do. Like in the slow path, it is also the same that according to your nature, that's how you're situated. But someone changing that, it would be very rare, right? But it's there because someone is, let's say, a Shudra, then after thousands of lifetimes or hundreds of lifetimes or whatever, depending upon their focus, then they'll move up to the Vaishya. Then so many lifetimes and up to the Kshatriya like this. But you do have the element, so therefore the aspect of moving slowly or just what you're born as is just naturally what you'll be. But you do have the element that by improper thoughts, then someone from an elevated position can take a low birth. Right? So it means everything else is fine, just the thoughts may be impure. So because of this, then that low birth, it would appear they're born in the Shudra family, but then they manifest all saintly qualities. So they're accepted as that saintly person. Right? Does that make sense? You know, or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya. And so they'll have those higher positions, though born in the lower one. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's why that element is there. Though in the slow path, it will be very rare. In the fast path, that may be more common. You know, because that ability is able to purify one so nicely that one can adjust. But one can't change the nature. We're talking about, you understand? So we haven't changed the nature. The person is brahminical by nature, let's say. But he has impure thoughts. So he's born in a Shudra family. So then he's, by that association, he's in that there. But the saintly elements are there. He associates nicely with saintly persons. Or takes up the devotional process. Then we see as very quickly those thoughts get purified and his natural position of Brahman come out. So it wasn't that you changed the nature. He was brahminical by nature. Just by karma, he took birth in a lower family. Mm-hmm. But it's a matter of what you actually can do. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not a sentimental thing. It's what you actually can do. Yeah. Okay. The third means is correct. Because it involves action which is correspondent, which corresponds, or which is correspondable.
I think which corresponds.
Okay, just trying to think of more endings you could put on it.
Has a correspondence.
Or is correspondence.
Which is a correspondization.
Yeah, which is a correspondization of his natural, the natural attraction of the mind. If a person is attracted to delicious food, he can eat food which has been offered to the Lord. Right?
Yeah.
So it's the point is not he's trying to worship the Lord to get back at the material facility. He's just engaging his material facility in the worship of the Lord. So that can, you understand?
Yeah.
So that's why the sakam means it's mixed with this second level.
Seen
the nishkam actually means it's the third level, yes.
This is the same distinction in Bhagavad Gita 9:26 when he says, you know, whatever you drink, whatever you... No. He's saying, one can offer me a flower, fruit, leaf, or water. And then
yes.
The next one he says, whatever you do, whatever putta you perform.
Yes.
So it seems like the second verse is the second step.
Yes.
Whereas the third one is the 9-26.
Well, I think what he's pointing out here is that I get the idea is that the first one, first option, is the natural option of the jnana, right? The third option is the natural position here of the devotee and how they're going to engage their material conditioning in the Lord's service. So in other words, their consciousness is on the fifth level, but their conditioning, then they're using this fourth level to purify themselves so that they're acting in pure devotion. And that second level that's offered, that's not really recommended because it's a contradiction. So that's more like Sakam Karma Yoga. Well, this next one is Nishkam Karma Yoga. So the Sakam Karma Yoga, you say it's a contradiction because you say it's for Vishnu, but actually it's for yourself. Like that.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So for the devotee, then that would just be a lower stage, you know, or a beginning stage of this process of Nishkarmi. You know, so just by process and good association, you'll elevate yourself to the next. But if you profess the second platform, then it's not a very strong platform. Mm-hmm. But for the non-devotee, just for the theistic moralist, that will be generally the position. If you've taken the theistic moralist and he's aware of the position, nature of the soul, right, then you're going to get, again, karmis and jnanis. So jnani will take the first option, karmi will take the second. Right? Does that make sense? You know, or they consider the third, but not actually because they don't accept the supremacy of the Lord. So they're just using karma yoga as Naishkarmi to get to that platform of what is in the first one. Like that.
Second option just sounds like it's staying as a beast of morals.
But you're adding into it the knowledge of the soul. So that's the platform of Vijnanamoya, as you know, to understand the soul. Like that. So it's because as we mentioned before, Varnashram is the standard cultural position of someone following Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? You have someone who's just on the platform of Kama, and that's all. So Dharma, you know, Artha, all these other things aren't important. It's just what I can get for myself. So it's not a very stable position. Then you can move to the next position, which has its practical elements. Right? You're pranamoy, this theistic moralist. I mean, atheistic moralist. But it's weak in that it becomes very speculative on how do you put it together. Because you don't really have a science, you don't have an authority. So it's just we're the authority. Right? So it's just like you've gone where there's myself only in the first stage. Then I accept there's society, there's others. But in the natural progression of that, then there must be the Lord of society. You know, not just an administrative head. Right? There must be someone who establishes what is morality. Right? Then in doing that, then you can actually follow Varnashram, which is the social system for the natural universal morality. Right? Then in doing that, then you're accepting now God as actually more serious as a person. Then having done that, then you can acknowledge that there's a soul. But then now you can either... Yeah. So now it's a matter of whether you accept the eternality of the form of the Lord or not. You know, the supremacy of bhakti or not. So the form of the Lord's eternal, then you would naturally move to this third aspect of this vijnanamoya. This impersonal, it means understanding the knowledge of the soul. But the varnashram stays as the culture. Just like when you move to the fifth, varnashram is the culture. So now, if you look at this, now from varnashram, you can get artha, and you can get kama, but your position of the state position is varnashram. So varnashram is the culture for all five levels. But you can have those on these first three these first two levels that don't follow it. Because basically, that's the definition. If you're on the first two levels without following varnashram, then that places you as these lower atheistic moralists or atheistic, you know, immoralists, right? Theistic moralists, then you do have those who may not be following Varnashram, but technically they're not really situated so well on this third platform, right? Because they're only accepting form of God in a pseudo way. So they're on, like on the second platform that has the concept that the next one has some benefit.
Okay,
yes. You know, just like you may say on the second level, you have the atheistic moralist, but their moralism is only actually just for social interaction and getting what you want. And when you're on your own in the privacy of your own house, you do whatever you like. See, there's always going to be a bridge in between each one of these.
Explains that this moral knowledge is for the sake of increasing pleasure and reducing pain.
Yes, that's a very good point. So, in other words, this moralistic knowledge is only to increase pleasure and reduce the difficulties, the anxieties, the obstacles, the pain, everything like this. That's all it's for. Like we were saying, the International Bill of Rights, what's the point of it? To make the opportunities for pleasure available and to reduce the pain.
Or extended sense gratification.
It's extended sense. That's what I was saying, is that it's just, you know, it's an international effort. So that's nice that people could cooperate together and things like that. But it still only has that purpose. It's not actually to understand God, God's laws, and how to work together on that level. It's just, we'll cooperate together to get sense gratification. So as long as everyone's getting sense gratification, you know, everybody's cool. But as soon as we're not getting sense gratification, people aren't cool. Mm. Is that the sense? The third means is correct because it involves an action which corresponds to what attracts the mind. Okay? So in other words, the action and what attracts the mind go together. Because you're serving the Lord and engaging your senses in the Lord's service. Right? Whatever your facility, so that's correct. The other one is you're engaging the senses. Your action is for getting something for yourself. But you're doing it as worship of the Lord, but the Lord's not your natural, point of attraction. So that's why it's contradictory. Means you're attracted to one thing, but you're worshiping the Lord as the other. You're attracted to the Lord, and you're engaging things that, you know, what you like in His service. Then it all works. It's all going in one direction, right?
Two directions
at once. I'm worshiping the Lord, but the ultimate point is the materialism. It's not actually the Lord. It's not like, okay, I offer something nice to Krishna, pure devotion, or I like these things myself, but I want to offer to Krishna because Krishna is my goal. Like that. So therefore, it's, you know, in other words, it's directly, or this has that indirect element to it, but still it's directed. The point of attraction of the mind is the point of action. By doing this simultaneously, he will cultivate his attraction to the Lord and satisfies the material attachment. By tasting the higher pleasure, very quickly, the lower taste will transform into the higher taste. This is classified as secondary bhakti, but it's still distinct from karma. Right, because that means that last one, that was karma. That was going to the Lord, but for karma. But it's a better position than not going to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least that concept, you're going to the Lord for everything. Then if you get the association of devotees,
mm-hmm.
then you may make that change. Like, so there's so many pious people, they're offering everything to the Lord, doing everything like that. But they think it's only for their own satisfaction. Then devotees come to the house, do a program, explain the philosophy, all this and that. Then they may say, oh, I have to change their conduct. They don't have to change what they're doing. They're doing everything in action correctly. All they have to do is change their conscience. Now, wouldn't that be a lot easier than, you know, a non-Vedic person who is not following any regulation, he doesn't have a face, he doesn't have an altar, he doesn't have really a concept. Does that make sense? Yes.
Bhagavatam verse where it says Sarva Karma. still worship Krishna. That's referring to the secondary bhakti.
Yes. Yeah, you know, what's it? Akama, sarvakama, vav. It means better you go to him, because he's the one that's actually giving it. But the point is why would you go to him who could give bhakti and get these lower things? But at least you're recognizing that he's the one giving it, not the demigods, not the material energy, not your own endeavors like this.
Not the second option.
No, it means what we mentioned about the karmi going to Krishna, but that's the second one. Like that. The devotee is the third one. Though it may have that leaning more towards the second one, meaning that it's for yourself. But the point is it's correct, because the goal is Krishna and the action is offering it to Krishna. So with time that will be connected.
It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada had more success with this other side, right? People who didn't have a concept, didn't have a culture.
Because the thing is the difficulty is you're, let's say you went as practicing this, you know, on your fourth level of consciousness, practicing this second option. The problem is the mode of goodness is very prominent. And everything's fairly nice. You don't really see the reason for giving up anything and taking up. Yeah, I mean, in your mind, you're already doing devotional service. They can't, because it's material, they can't tell actually what's pure devotion. Mm-hmm. So if they regularly associate with devotees, they could understand it, but that association with devotees isn't actually important to them. Right? Because life's already nice. Not that they couldn't, just that they don't. Mm-hmm. While others, then, in following the Malecha system, means you're talking about putting so much ghee on the fire that the fire goes out. So then you have a window there where the Malecha doesn't know what to do. So now you give him spiritual life, he takes it up. Right? Difficulty, he'll be, you know, philosophically able to grasp all these things by his sincerity and by the Lord's mercy. Culturally, then, there's not necessarily a lot of qualification. But the devotional process, because of its natural potency, gyan and vairag come. So all the good qualities come. So it's just a matter of time, and one can do it very easily. Just one has to be aware that of doing it. You know, otherwise one day becomes conditioned by just whatever you do, the kind of works. You know what I'm saying? So in the same way, it's just like it becomes hard to establish devotion in an environment of, you know, nicely practiced varnashram. It becomes very hard to establish varnashram in an environment of nicely practiced bhakti if it's not the cultural thing. Because you get conditioned by, I'm engaging the Western culture in the Lord's service, so everything's fine. You know what I'm saying? Or, we pick those elements, because varnashram's not the deity worship and, you know, the temple and all those things. That we're dealing with Pancharatrik there, the Bhagavad, all that. Varnashram is when you go home. What you do when you're not in the temple. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? That's the problem. Because the other is, you know, the Pancharatrik, the Bhagavad, the Pancharatrik is more easily accepted. Because that simply takes the qualification of the soul. But Varnashram, it means you need qualification of the condition. That's more difficult. So as you get the qualification, the point is what do I need that for? You know, it just makes it socially work nicer, that's all. But technically, a devotee, even if he doesn't practice really varnashram, but his sadhana is good, his faith in Krishna, his devotional practice, and he's nice with devotees, he'll be successful. Because he has the philosophy, he has the etiquette. Mm-hmm. Right, he has the service, so he will be successful. It doesn't mean that socially all the things will be taken care of what he's looking for. But he'll be spiritually successful. Mm-hmm. So that's why, despite devotees not necessarily taking very seriously the varnashram aspect, they can still go back to Godhead. Mm-hmm. But socially it's a rough ride. But spiritually it's fine. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Two main difficulties would seem to be The two main difficulties that come up seem to be not dealing with devotees properly, or when the Vedic is presented out of whatever reason, they speak against it. And of course, some different people.
Yeah, no, so those can be, if those are avoided. You know, the point is if you're comfortable doing what you're doing, then just do it. You know what I'm saying? You know, if you're happy going home, eating your food, and doing whatever you do, great, as long as, you know, you're Krishna conscious and maintain the etiquette. But, you know, no need to fight against it. Because, so that means then you identify with it. It's just, no, this is what you've done. You've been doing this for the last 50 years. So therefore, you're comfortable at it. So what's the problem? You know? But if you oppose, then that means then that non-Vedic lifestyle is an identity rather than just a comfortable way of doing things.
Maharaj, Mahaprabhu Srila Prabhupada mentions that one can take one regulative principle and follow it nicely for the entire life. So contextually, can you take that as a general principle and follow it?
It means only take one and leave the other three?
No, it's not like, I mean, if you take one principle, if you follow
nicely... But he's not talking about, when you say principle, which principles you mean? You don't mean the four regulative principles, you mean the principle of bhakti. Yes, of course. Means, in other words, each one includes the others, but you're focusing. In other words, you can relate... Okay. I don't know that because their hoof is just the size they seem to be quite common.
He didn't come from upstairs.
Huh?
He didn't come from upstairs, did he?
Yeah, he didn't come from upstairs. So he didn't have
to. They do go across the bridge sometimes.
Yeah?
We can take one.
Because it includes all the others. So the focus is there. Like in deity worship, there's chanting and there's remembering and all these different things. So the point is, it's just where you focus, and by doing that, then it's perfect. See, so he gives the example of devotees that have become perfect in one of them, or Ambarish Maharaj, who became perfect by following all of them. So it doesn't matter. Whatever, any one, two, or a combination, or singular, doesn't matter. As long as you're engaged, the ideas of body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. Is that okay?
And related to that, another question is, so Prahlada Maharaj says like 9 angas of Shravana Kirtan. So it's going by sequentially. Is there any importance, like first he mentioned Shravanam?
Because Shravanam, if you don't hear, how will you chant? You're not chanting, how do you remember?
So that is important.
Those three are in order. The last three are in order. The other three in the middle are your various options there. You know, focus more on the paraphernalia. It means everything connected with the Lord or the deity worship of the Lord. You know, in other words, you're dealing with all the paraphernalia.
Follow the leader.
Well, at least somebody's figured out that little one step up there is. Sometimes they just have fun doing something that they know is not normal.
It's not supposed to be eating that.
Hmm?
It's supposed to be eating that book.
What is he eating?
On that plant.
Oh, that's bamboo. No, he's not supposed to be eating bamboo. But it doesn't mean
they were chewing the vines off the wall yesterday. The creek was going up the creek.
I think he's coming over for another meal. Oh no, he's going up to the kitchen. Okay.
Incredible news.
Seems to be they're getting very comfortable. Okay. Yeah. So, in other words, archana is the deity worship, and which includes the paraphernalia. Padasevana means you're focusing on the paraphernalia, but naturally you'll be engaged in the deity worship. Bandhanam is a part of the deity worship, but that's becoming your more prominent element. You know what I'm saying? Prayer. So they're all part of that pancharatric system. Right? So it's just a matter of which aspect of it means the devotees and then the dham or things connected to the deities or the prayers of the deities or the worship, the actual technical worship itself. Does that make sense? And the last is then that degree of that surrender. You know? That servitorship, so you're accepting the Lord's position and your position, the friendship, so that you're preaching and trying to do what the Lord wishes to be done, or Akamani Vedan, and that will surrender. Like that. So, it means naturally there's going to be a combination in the life of the devotee. He's doing Shravanam, Kirtan, and Vishnu Smarana. And that's going basically according to the degree of his, Dasyam. Sakya Matmani Vedan, right? Means according to that level. Does that make sense? At the same time as his involvement in the pancharatric system, the form that we have, then there may be more focus on one of these three, on the deity itself, on the connected with the deity, or on the prayers to the Lord. You understand? So naturally in the life of the devotees, all of them are there. It's just where kind of... Does that make sense? Well, okay.
I was just going to say, I think Prabhupada makes that statement about the five main limbs of bhakti too, about, you know, hearing Bhagavatam, living in a holy place.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Yes, yes.
Any one of those can grant.
Yeah. That means, of all the processes, the most important are these five.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, the association of devotees, chanting Hare Krishna. Right, worshiping the deity, living in the dham, like that. Worship of Tulsi, like that. It just depends on where you have. Because you can have hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, and then Tulsi is included in worshiping the deity. Or you put hearing the Bhagavatam, the association of devotees, so you understood it's not just reading on your own, but with devotees, and then Tulsi becomes the thing. Like that. So these five then are of them that... Those are the most powerful of all the individual items of the 64 items. These are the most powerful. Does that make sense? Okay. By tasting the higher pleasure, one very quickly, the lower taste will transform into the higher taste. This is classed as secondary bhakti, but it's still distinct from karma. Right? Although karma is present in the desire for a result, it is still possible to destroy karma itself in this process, because your goal is not the karma. This makes the distinction between in this fourth level of consciousness, the second option, where your goal is karma, though you're worshiping the Lord. Here, your goal is not karma. Your goal is pleasing the Lord, though you're engaging karma in the Lord's service. That this is my material desire, but I'm engaging in the Lord's service. Right? Because it appears that the second is the same as the third. But the second, it reverses. It seems to be going towards the Lord, but it's actually going away from the Lord. Right? When all bodily and mental actions act according to the secondary devotion, then they become subordinate to secondary bhakti, and then serve real bhakti. Right? So when everything is connected in this way, then all the senses, everything, is then become subordinate to this secondary form of bhakti. Then everything becomes nicely purified. Mm-hmm. Right, so then one becomes nicely situated. Those theistic moralists who have this inclination become devotionally inclined. All other theistic moralists are still materially engaged. Right? So the first two, they're on the platform of knowledge of the soul, but they're still, how you say, nicely situated in karma and jnana. And they're not inclined towards bhakti. So this third one, then they're inclined towards bhakti. So this naishkarmya is being done. So the other one is that sakam. This is the naishkarmya. Mm-hmm. So this is what Narad Muni recommends, is naishkarmya. Mm-hmm. Because it will purify the theistic moralist, it will purify the devotee. Because the conditioning is the same. So it'll purify both. Right? One, it will bring one to bhakti, the other one it will cultivate, it'll cultivate their bhakti. Mm-hmm. It means bring the bhakti when you meet devotees. In defeating all the opposing views, purva paksha, bhakti becomes established as the only practical method. Bhakti is the highest attainment for man. It does not contradict the progress of society or the welfare of the living entities. It bestows the inherent eternal peace and bliss to the soul. Bhakti is the way of life for the human being. It is perfect and all auspicious. It is the only material. It is the only spiritual thing in the material world. Right? Bhakti is. Okay. Footnote 7. Where was footnote 6? Oh, all other theistic moralists are still materially engaged. Okay. Footnote 6. If one worships the Lord, what is the necessity of austerities? One does not worship the Lord, what is accomplished by austerities? If the Lord is realized within and without, then what can austerity accomplish? If the Lord cannot be realized within or without, what can austerities accomplish? Yeah, so in other words, bhakti is the only thing. So here in this, footnote 7, remembrance of Lord Krishna's lotus feet destroys everything inauspicious and awards the greatest good fortune. It purifies the heart and bestows devotion for the Supreme Soul, along with knowledge enriched with realization and renunciation. So, that devotion gives knowledge and realization and renunciation. So, everything comes. So, by bhakti, you get everything you're looking for by these other processes, and you don't, and it's not troublesome. One can say, "Oh, but then it's not very serious," you know. So, but which is generally we look at the material world as what is efficient is considered a higher element, right? So why would we consider because doing all the austerities and everything is more difficult? But not so efficient. The devotional service, though it's easier, is more efficient. Because efficient generally means easier. Mm-hmm. Right? So why would we make this mistake except for, you know, false ego? It's identity that, you know, I'm God or I'm special or I'm this. So, because it's like everybody can do the bhakti, not everybody can do the austerity. So that sets you apart, that creates your, how you say, uniqueness, your visesha. So that gives you substance. So my substance and my uniqueness, my substance coming from my uniqueness of I'm very austere. But the point is the prayojana, the result you get is very difficult, it's not very efficient. So yes, you're the guy who's using the more difficult process to inefficiently get the results. But because they're looking at it as that austerity is that main thing, rather than the result. Because in other words, they don't know why they're doing austerity. They're attached to the experience of doing the austerity. By cultivating sadhana bhakti, the devotee attains the stage of bhava and finally prema. Right? Because sadhana bhakti will situate you on bhava. Because sadhana bhakti is simply the practice of those elements that give rise to or are the medium for the appearance of bhava. Right? In other words, if you have a taste for Krishna consciousness, that taste is actually bhava. You know, what you are gaining. That interest in devotional service, that's bhava. But because it's so small, it's not manifesting ecstatic symptoms on a consistent basis, we don't call it bhava. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, I bring you a meal, right? And I put out a nice big plate and everything, and I get out some tweezers, I bring out one grain of rice and put it on your plate. What are you going to say?
It's not a meal.
It's not a meal, you know.
I'd be speechless.
Yeah, okay. So, now, is it rice?
Yes.
But would you call that rice? No. You know, it's kind of like, you call this rice? Yeah, of course it is. It's rice. It's, you know, it got it out of the package, you know. What do you think rice looks like, you know? But it's one grain. So that's why it's not called Baba. Because it's only one grain. So as you go, Shraddha, you add, you know, a couple of grains. As you go, you add a few more. Until you have a full plate. That's Baba. It's a very active day today. It just keep coming back and forth, back and forth. When the sweet and majestic Lord, the abode of Lakshmi, opens his storehouse of rasa and says, O friend, I have been carefully holding this storehouse for you. You alone have rights to it. Rejecting me, you fell under the spell of my energy, of illusion. Continuously, I have shown great regard for you. As you have attained this by your own efforts, I am extremely pleased. Serve my ever-fresh, pleasurable form and play with me in the endless ocean of bliss. Do not fear. Do not lament, for you have attained eternal life of bliss. For me, you have cut all chains of material attachment. I will not be able to repay the debt of love you have shown. Be naturally satisfied by your service. So this is, in other words, this is what Krishna wants to do. Right? So when coming to prema, then it's just like that. Then it's all this is there.
Yeah. It's interesting when he says, you have attained this by your own efforts, but he's neglecting the fact that he sent guru, he sent shastra.
Yeah, but that's the thing. That's why he said, carefully holding this, alone the other, rejecting me, fell into. I have shown great regard for you. That means this, I've given everything, and I've mixed out of his affection. He's sending everything, trying to make everything work.
Yeah.
To those who reject the nectarine instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and takes up other teachings, Rishabdev has given the following instruction in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, fifth chapter. Keep this instruction in your mind. Quote, one who cannot deliver his dependents from the path of repeated birth and death should never become a spiritual master, a father, a husband, a mother, or a worshipful demigod. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.18. So that kind of like cuts out anything in the path of, you know, what one knows in material life. In other words, you know, in other words, you should take no position in the material world if you can't actually make your dependents devotees.
Because you're getting implicated in their karma.
Yeah, you get implicated. So, there you have it. You're actually finished.
Very well.
I'm just thinking, is that if there was just a very short amount of the other one, you could just read that through. I don't think that's... Yeah, I don't know, we might be able to do a few minutes. Might be worthwhile, so otherwise I'm not sure. How it works, like you were saying on Monday, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it's going to go with this other one. Yeah. Go past this day. Okay, so then looking at this from page 14, text 11. Spirit is different from matter. Spirit always has free will. Even when it enters the world of illusion, spirit never loses its nature. So the nature of the living entity to be free, to exist, to be free, to search after happiness. Right? So that's the point. That it exists and it wants happiness, and then it makes an engagement to become happy. That you can't change. Right? So free will is what kind of, how you're going to engage. But that engagement is going to depend upon how you identify yourself and what goals you want. So that's still the free will. Right? Because when you say free will, because it means, well, what about my free will? Yeah, you have free will. It doesn't mean you'll get it. Get what you want. They're saying, no, if I have free will, I get what I want. No, free will is just wanting it. Getting it, that's another discussion. Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's actually an illusion. No, but where's my free will? You know, I tried, I didn't get. No, yeah, you had your free will, you tried, you didn't get. You know? Commentary by Srila Bhakti Thakur. What is the nature of spirit? Many times that question is asked. In this material world, one does not find a perfect or complete answer. Even though the soul is spiritual, it has now forgotten its own nature. Shackled in Maya's prison, the soul finds it hard to give a clear answer about its own nature. The soul's nature is to be a tiny particle of spirit, although that nature is pervertedly reflected in the material world. The soul never really abandons its own nature. First, this question may be asked. If the spirit soul is different from matter, then the spirit soul must be different from all material things. What is that difference? First, one should seek the answer to that question. Many qualities may be seen in material things, but free will is never seen in them. Neither is consciousness ever seen in them. Unless the soul is completely restricted in its activities, these two qualities are not covered. It means it's like a rock. You don't see free will or consciousness. So now if the soul becomes a rock, then you might not see so much free will or consciousness. Though it's there, but you know, it's basically you're not going to perceive it.
Yeah.
Right?
You use free will in the sense of desiring that something happens.
Yes, yes, yes. Because your identity is there, your goals are there, so then that will to. Because you see, thinking, feeling, willing is action. You know, it's based on how you identify and what you think are goals. You know, but willing means the nature of action. So therefore, if it's too restricted, you don't see it much. Like the tree, it's not that it decides, well, there's more sun over there, and then you come back in the morning and the tree's over there, right? You know? See, the man comes out and, you know, Martha, your trees are in the front lawn again. Therefore, that means it's covered to the point where you won't really see it. First, one should seek the answer to that question. Unless the soul is completely restricted in its activities, these two qualities are not covered. They remain manifest. Qualities like heat and liquidity may be seen in material elements like fire and water. But the liquidity of water is not a sign of free will present in water. Right? The water is not liquid of its own accord. Right? It's just that's its nature. Many different material elements may be considered, but none of them acts by its own free will. For example, we do not see that fire acts of its own free will. However, in spiritual beings, in souls, even though they may be covered by the material bodies of lowly species like worms and ants, we see free will as present. Walking and walking, an ant considers which way he should go, and he walks on that path. This power of the ant to think and to choose are signs of free will. We do not see these signs in inert matter.
There. Exercising matter, the free will.
What are we talking about? We're talking about cows. We see them only in spirit and living beings. Therefore, consciousness and free will are part of the nature of spirit. Of this, there is no doubt. In conclusion, conscious, free will, bliss, and the idea it is I are all parts of the nature of spirit. Right, so consciousness is your sambandha, free will is your abhideya, your bliss is your prayoga, or you know, satchit ananda.
Interesting.
Right?
Interesting.
Even when it enters the material world of five elements, the spirit soul never abandons that nature. Okay, now we have text 12. Please know that the material world is meaningless and illusory. It is an ancient prison house for the souls who have turned their faces from the Lord. An ancient prison house. Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The material world is meaningless and illusory. It is an ancient prison house for the souls who have turned their faces from the Supreme Lord. Following Narad Muni's instructions, Vyas entered a trance of meditation, his heart purified by devotional service. In that trance, Vyas saw the truth. This is described in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.4-6. Okay. Thus, he fixed his mind perfectly engaged by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with his material energy, which was fully under control, which was under full control. Due to this material energy, right? Material energy is there doing everything, but it's fully under the control of the Lord. Due to this material external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product, and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. So the living entity actually thinks he's matter. That's the problem. That's why it's hard to tell the difference between matter and spirit, or you think life comes from matter because you identify as matter. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. Permission. So you take all those things that you identify, or what you want, or what you need, you know, all the actions connected to the Lord, then you start to purify this. Because the impurity is that this is separate from the Lord. You connect it to the Lord, it becomes, it is in its natural position. The material world created by Maya is a useless and illusory place for the individual soul. We're small particles of spirit. Why do the individual souls reside in this worthless place? The answer to this question is that the material world is an ancient prison for the individual souls who have turned their faces away from the Lord. Only the souls who have turned their faces away from the Supreme Lord have entered the material world. The souls who do not turn their faces. The souls who do not turn their faces away from the Supreme Lord remain always free from the prison of matter. They do not enter the material world. They stay always in the spiritual world. The Maya Shakti, potency of material illusion, is always under Lord Krishna's control. As darkness must stay always far away from the shining sun, so the illusory potency, Maya, must stay always far away from Lord Krishna, far away from the spiritual world. Right? So in other words, the thing where it says one is looking to that other side, the other bank, means you're looking at the spirit, you're looking at the spiritual energy, and you're just seeing it not in connection with the Lord. So that it's that it's not connected to the Lord, that's an illusion. Right? Because it is connected to the Lord. So therefore you're actually looking at the other bank. So you're looking at the same spiritual energy that another person may be looking at. But you're actually seeing the other side of the river while they're seeing this side. Right? So that's very far away. So that manifestation of it then is kept separately. So therefore, even though you're there, you're very far away. So I mentioned he's very near but very far away. He's living in the heart, but because of the material consciousness, he's very far away. The consciousness is not, you know, is devotional, then the Lord is very near. You know what I'm saying? So it's not location. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. The individual souls who have turned their faces away from Lord Krishna are attracted to the bewildering variety of Maya's world. In this way, they fall under Maya's spell. In truth, the individual souls are always beyond the modes of material nature. But when they fall under Maya's spell, this individual souls think that they themselves are products of the material modes. Then they try to enjoy the pathetic pleasures the three material modes offer. So here you're talking about, this is not being spoken by someone who's just read about it, so then they're making this strong statement. You're talking about someone from the spiritual world. Because generally, if one's from here and one's saying, oh, this is bad, you say, oh, the useless or the disgusting or like that. He's just saying it's pathetic. You think that's enjoyment? You know, it's like, you know, that's the sad thing, is that Maya provides such a minimal amount of enjoyment that it's pathetic. You know? This is the condition of the souls who have turned their faces away from the Supreme Lord. The other spirit souls, the souls who remain in the spiritual world, do not turn their faces away from the Supreme Lord. Only the souls who turn their faces away from the Supreme Lord leave the spiritual world and go to the world of matter. And the next one's by Dave. Actually, boils all the way through.
A lot of
Sanskrit. Yeah, 14. Okay, so 14 is the answer, 13 is the right thing. So we'll have to do that. We got through one page in 10 minutes.
A good clip.
Huh?
Moving at a good clip.
Yes. So by the looks of it, technically depends. You know, we might be able to do this in one class.
Depending on if we have it in the morning or evening.
You know, yeah, we do it in the evening at this time. We could do it in one sitting. So then... just wondering if we should, because we could do this in one or two sittings, then
perhaps we should leave the first couple of days of time.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if we do that and do Thursday, Friday, because by the looks of it, definitely we could do it if we just checked and it works. Did you notice this point? A couple of times he cleared his throat, but then didn't say anything. The idiot. Okay, so is that okay?
I think the recorder's still running.
Yeah, so Thursday and Friday. Well, that doesn't get edited off.
Huh?
Huh?
Well, it doesn't.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Samaveta Bhakti
Jai
Chalita
Hare Hare Om.
Essay questions.
Oh, okay.